Hey, welcome back. 7 minutes gone past 4 p.m. Hard Factor continues now. Your number one talk station, Nigeria Info. I'm Dayo. And next up, Rivers PDP governorship candidate dragged before Conduct Bureau. And here's a bit of the story. The Code of Conduct Bureau has invited the governorship candidate of the PDP in Rivers State, Sibinyalayi Fubara, to an interview at its headquarters on November 7, 2022, as part of its investigation of an alleged breach of the Code of Conduct for public officers. Now, according to the invitation letter, dated October 26, 2022, signed by the Director of Intelligence, Investigation and Monitoring, Gwemi Sebastian, Fubara is expected to honour the invitation with the certified true copies of all acknowledgement slips, letters of appointment, promotion records of service and pay slips and bank account statements, among others. And part of the letter read, quote, "This invitation is made pursuant to the mandate and powers of the Bureau as enshrined in the third schedule, part 1, paragraph 3E of the Constitution of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, as amended, section 137A and B and 138A and B, Penal Code Laws of the Federation of Nigeria 1990 and section 104 of Evidence Act 2011. End of quote. Now, Fubara's invitation by the CCB came months after a director, volunteer legal practitioner Foundation for Morals and Values, Ifeanyi Chukwu Obasanweze, petitioned it to investigate Fubara for false declaration of assets, money laundering, and corruption. There you have it. But I'm asking you as well at this time, should the finances of candidates be x-rayed before they can contest elections? Let's get your take on that. But also join me via phone for this conversation. I've got Henry Kinney, lawyer, national legal advisor with the Committee for the Defense of Human Rights. Henry, good evening to you and welcome to Hard Facts.
Thank you for having me.
By the way, you can also join the conversation via Facebook and Twitter at Nigeria Info PH. Henry, let's get right to it then. What exactly is it that the Code of Conduct Bureau investigates, and why would they be investigating Sibinyalayi Fubara?
The Code of Conduct Bureau established under Section 153, subsection 1A of the Constitution of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, investigates or receives complaints, petitions, and allegations against public officers who are alleged to have committed some form of infraction or breach against the provisions of the Code of Conduct. And so the Bureau is vested with the power to receive those complaints, investigate those allegations, and well-founded, make recommendations and give directives to the tribunal for the prosecution of those alleged violators of the provisions of the Code of Conduct. That's what it is. And those who fall within the net of the provisions of the Code of Conduct Bureau are public officers. And then the infractions or the misconduct that qualify for the allegations of breach of the Code of Conduct are also provided in the Code of Conduct for public officers. That's what it is.
Now, can anyone petition the CCB to investigate any public office holder?
Yes, the Code of Conduct Bureau can investigate any public officer, any public president, a vice president, a governor, a deputy governor, members of the National Assembly, members of House of Assembly or States, members of the Judiciary, and then, of course, every other public officer in the public service of the federal government, the state government, and the local government. These are constitutional provisions.
Yeah, but what I'd also like to know is, can anyone petition the CCB to investigate any public office holder? Or is there a certain criteria that you have to meet before you can petition the CCB?
There is no extant criteria by virtue of any provision of the Code of Conduct Bureau, or the Code of Conduct, or the Constitution, or any enabling act that is set by the National Assembly. There is no prerequisite of that policy. Any Nigerian citizen, any person can therefore make that kind of application. And it does mean, which of course have been held in many cases by the courts, up to the Supreme Court, in respect to matters of public interest. Because since those who are within this net of the provisions of the Code of Conduct are public officers, it means that in their official duties and functions, one way or the other, Nigerians and Nigerian institutions will be affected. So it falls squarely within the description of public interest use. So anybody, any individual, any institution can bring that allegation or that petition before the Code of Conduct for investigation.
Now, what would be the typical composition of this kind of a petition? Is it simply, oh, this man is a thief, oh, that woman stole money, or would that petition come with some evidence to prove this allegation?
Yeah, thank you. The provisions of the Constitution with respect to the innocence of anybody who is alleged to have committed any offense or any infraction of any law apply also in this case. It therefore means that anybody who is alleging any infraction or breach of any of the provisions of the Code of Conduct by way of petition must be able to give facts and details of this allegation. And then it is the same effect that the person, the violator, the public officer that is alleged to have violated any of the provisions is also deemed innocent until proven guilty. So to be able to succeed, it will mean that the petitioner should be able to not only give details to his allegation, but also should be able to have some extent of proof. But the difference here is that the responsibility of investigation and then gathering evidence for the purpose of finding a prima facie case against the alleged violator by the Bureau, so to enable them to transmit their finding to the tribunal, is such that the onus or the greater burden of finding those evidence will lie with the Bureau more than the person who has got a report. Therefore, its semblance is also the complainant to a police. That's the semblance. It is not the responsibility of the complainant or the citizen that brings a complaint to the police to carry out the investigation for the purpose of establishing some evidence for prosecution. And that is why upon complaint, upon a report to the police, they will carry out the investigation. The purpose of investigation is to verify the allegation and to also, some form, find and gather evidence for the purpose of prosecution. So to the extent that the petitioner here would be able to also advance other facts to support his petition, the onus is more on the Bureau to carry out the investigation and do the verification. That's why they are inviting Mr. Fubara and then requiring of him to provide certain documents for the purpose of verifying the allegations against him and also to build the evidence for purpose of probably referring to the tribunal for prosecution.
Now, also, for the CCB to be going ahead with an investigation on this matter, and I've taken the further step of inviting the PDP governorship candidate in River State as well, does it mean that they are convinced, based on the petition before them and the evidence very likely supplied by the petitioner, does it imply they are convinced that he actually does have some questions to answer?
Yes, that's very instructive. There is no basis for any investigative agency or authority to, on the face of a complaint or a petition, to determine that it's frivolous. The responsibility to carry out investigation is to establish two things: either that the allegations are verifiable and then are substantiated, or they are not. So, to the extent that the petitioner has, like I said, the right to be able to complain, and I've also said that he should go beyond just mere allegation, but try to substantiate his allegation. But the requirement is not more than that, but to raise the complaint, to probably notify the Bureau in this regard as the investigative agency, to say, look, things are suspicions or allegations that I have with respect to this person and give this back to the extent he has, it is the responsibility of the Bureau to do a more diligent and in-depth investigation to get to those allegations. So it will mean that before the Bureau will extend an investigation, they will have looked through the petition. And like I said, it is not at this stage that any investigative authority will look at the face of the petition and determine the frivolity of it or the substance of it. It's until they carry out investigation. And that is why there are sometimes, after investigation, whether it is the police or any other investigative authority, you could find that the allegations were malicious and false and unfounded, and probably even misleading, or in fact, they are not true. So you can turn the other way and hold
What happens then, Henry? What happens if nothing is found after the Code of Conduct Bureau concludes its investigation?
Like every other matter, even when you probably bring a complaint or a petition to the police, if upon investigation and it's found that the allegations are unfounded, of course there will be no prosecution against the alleged offender, really. And like I said, in some instances, the pendulum could turn the other way, and then the complainant may be charged for bringing false information against the police. But the window for false information prosecution against the complainant is not made in a way that would deter citizens from raising complaints or bringing allegations or suspicions before investigative authorities. Such that they will not be supported in that regard by citizens. But where beyond just raising allegation or writing a petition, you take other steps to even lead the investigative authorities beyond just complaining, right? These things are a bit more practical, Dio, that to the extent that beyond just complaining, you prepare, you engineer that probably you will let the investigative authorities to the strong belief that what you're saying is true, beyond just raising where they say, okay, give us information. Security agencies will say, if you suspect any criminal conduct or movement or anywhere, give us information. So when you go beyond just giving information or raising an alarm, and then you are substantiating things to a great degree of belief and letting the security agencies to act on it, and it's that they do, you may be held liable for giving false information. And especially that way again, when you are in a position that you need to know that what you are saying was not true, so that you will be able to distinguish between innocently bringing a petition of allegation of an offense and the other one that may be intentional, that you are aware that the facts are not true, or you are in a position to know that they are not true, and then you're leading the security agencies to believe that they are true. There is no longer innocent. It becomes some intentional fraudulent and misleading representation in that regard.
All right, now, what could happen if at the end of its investigation, the Code of Conduct Bureau does find something, does believe that the River State Governorship candidate for the PDP is liable and has got questions to answer, what could happen to him then?
Yes, thank you. Like I said, the powers of the Bureau at the moment is to receive this allegation, investigate, and when they are convinced that that's the prima facie case and there are facts and evidence available to them, what they will do, one, is to now write or transmit their investigation report to the Code of Conduct Tribunal and then become the prosecutors and complainants there. Then the Code of Conduct Tribunal will prosecute this alleged violator who has committed the breach of the provisions of the Code of Conduct. Now, if at the end of it, like every other trial, is established that those allegations were true, and then the alleged offender is found liable and guilty of this, because it could actually take some civil coloration, and in some situation in the Code of Conduct trials, it could amount to crime and criminal behaviors as provided in other criminal laws. Now, whatever the outcome would be, the punishment by the provisions of the Code of Conduct of public officers under the Constitution may include if the alleged offender is holding office, he will be ordered to vacate that office or that seat. That's one. Two, it could further lead to an order of disqualification from holding any public office. But the purpose and objective of the Code of Conduct for public officers is to regulate the behaviors and conduct of public officers in dealing with public affairs and resources to fight against corruption, bribery, and those illicit behaviors, really. So it means that anybody who is found culpable by the Code of Conduct tribunal at the end of the trial would be disqualified from further holding any public office for a minimum, for not exceeding a period of 10 years. And then another is where property had been acquired in contravention to the provisions of the Code of Conduct for public officers, then those property will be seized and will be forfeited to the state. Then, like I said, the fourth punishment by the Code of Conduct tribunal will be that if there are criminal elements that form the ingredients of criminal offences in any of the criminal laws, then of course that punishment for that criminal element of that criminal offence in any of the criminal laws will also be a punishment against that person. Say, for instance, if in all of these there is an element of stealing, and then the Criminal Code Act provides for stealing, and then in the punishment for it, in the punishment section, is 7 years, for instance. You will, in addition to those other punishments of vacation of office, disqualification of forfeiture or seizure of the property, you will also be sentenced to seven years term.
Please hold on. So we have to go for commercial break now. We'll return in a moment. The conversation will continue. Please stay tuned. Hard Facts, we'll be back in a bit.
We take off with the biggest conversations with an exchange of opinions and ideas on the Morning Crossfire. Settle you into your day when we say hello, Port Hackett.
Take you on a ride to the sunny side of life.
Hover a bit while picking at the details on Hard Facts.
Take a detour through the exciting world of sports.
And get back on track with Let's Talk. Let's Talk.
Land you safely as we chit-chat into the morning on Chat Station.
Chat Station.
And then do it all over again on your number one talk, news and sports radio station, 92.3 Nigeria Info.
Welcome back. Still Hard Facts to Nigeria Info and Herring Port Harcourt. I'm Dai. It's 4:30 p.m. Discussions continue. The matter being discussed at this time. Once again, Rivers PDP governorship candidate dragged before conduct bureau from the punch. My guest, Henry Kene, is National Legal Advisor with the CDHR. Henry, welcome back.
Thank you, Dai, for having me again.
Remember, you can also join via facebook.com/NigeriaInfoPH. We're also live on Twitter at NigeriaInfoPH. The phone line will be opened in a moment. But Henry,
yes.
So before the break, I was asking what the consequences might be for Sim Fubara if the CCB is convinced he's got some questions to answer. By the way, does this also imply that a possibility of him being barred from taking part in next year's general elections?
Yes, it's possible. I have just said that the provision of paragraph 18, subparagraph 2, is to the effect, and that is the fifth schedule, is to the effect that if the Code of Conduct Tribunal established under paragraph 15 rules that Obara or any other individual at a standing trial before the tribunal is culpable and found guilty of any of the alleged infractions, the punishments are, as I stated, of importance to the person you've asked, is that we disqualify that violator or that public officer who has breached the provisions of the Code of Conduct, disqualify that person from holding public office. And so a candidate who is taking election into a public office created, the office of the governor created under the Constitution, and recall what I said, for the purpose of the Code of Conduct Bureau that the Constitution listed public officers, and they include governors. So if you're disqualified even before an election, that you are not qualified to hold a public office, then of course we're not going to a fruitless exercise of still electing somebody who has already been disqualified from holding public office. So it will inadvertently imply that the Independent National Electoral Commission could, on that ground, indeed disqualify that person from holding election, because it will amount to one of the disqualifications for contesting even to be elected into those positions created by the Constitution.
In the event that the CCB reaches such a decision or conclusion that the PDP's candidate is not qualified to run for election, to run for office, can that decision be appealed?
It can be appealed. Every decision of the courts in this country, including the Code of Conduct Tribunal, are appealable. For the Code of Conduct Tribunal, the dissatisfied party can appeal to the Court of Appeal.
The line's open right now. Join the conversation. Call 0700-923-093. That's 0700-923-093. Also, join via facebook.com/Nigerian for PH. You can also join via Twitter at Nigerian for PH. We are live on those platforms. Well, on Facebook, Barry White's Crowder goes, River State has no judiciary. Every effort to drag him to anywhere in River State is all a waste of time. Well, there is the judiciary everywhere in the country, including here in River State. Emmanuel Eni goes, a clear conscience, fears no accusations. Got a call on the line now. Hello, Hard Fact 2, welcome. Please go ahead. Right, once again, 0700-93-093 is the number to call. I doubt if the investigation by the CCB will yield anything, because Mr. Fubara's principal will press the usual button in the presidency to seal it up. If not, Fubara, as a civil servant, should explain to Rivers people from his payslip how he was able to afford the governorship ticket of the PDP that runs into millions of naira. Kevin Dial, he who goes to equity must go with clean hands. In recent time, the PDP has taken other political parties to different courts, and now it's their turn. And I hope the investigation of the CCB, it's the CCB, not CCTV. I hope the investigation of the CCB will not confirm the indictment or the allegation by the petitioner. I think this particular petition will be a lesson to political parties to imbibe tolerance. That's from our. Back to Facebook. Ned Agumar goes, if not for the River State Governor, Wike, why would he present someone who is already under investigation by anti-graft agencies as a Guba candidate? We don't need someone like Sim Fubara to be River's governor, and River's people will at the appropriate time decide who leads the state. And let's see. Okowa Charles is with a center question in. Can the CCB investigate an individual who is out of office, since its main duty is to checkmate serving public office holders? All right. Henry will respond to that shortly, but let's take a call right now. We've got Inamdi from Rimosi. Inamdi, you're welcome. Go ahead.
Hello. Good evening.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah. Genuinely, I think I'm one of the people who have been asking questions. I didn't even know. It's just that at some point I heard the PDP governorship candidate had one issue like that with EFCC. So I'm one of the people who have been asking questions. Why is the guy not coming out? Nobody's hearing from him. Now that the CCD issue has come up, I think it's beginning to get clear to me. But just like some other people said, I am genuinely afraid that something might not come out of it. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I am genuinely afraid. Why am I saying so? Just maybe a few days ago, the immediate past NBA chairman, that Olumide Abata, said that politicians have messed up the judiciary. I just want to believe it's alleged or it's not a statement of fact. Because based on antecedents, I genuinely don't know who has ever gone to court in Nigeria against a case that Wiki has interest in and the person has won. If not, I would have been optimistic that the truth about Timi Fubara's antecedents or corruption charges, the truth about it might come up. But let us keep our fingers crossed and not lose complete hope on the judiciary or on the system. Apart from it, I genuinely think if this thing will have anything fruitful.
But Inamdi, you do realize that even if it's cleared by the CCB, it doesn't imply that the system is faulty. The whole point is to investigate and determine guilt or innocence. That the person is found innocent does not automatically mean that the system is faulty.
But you know the problem with it. You know the problem with it is, even in a case whereby he is found, innocent by the CCB, it still leaves the taste in the mouth that, general taste in the mouth that his principle, just like some other people have also sent message or committed, that his principle has influenced whatever outcome from it, because there has never been a case anything that involved him went against him. It has never happened. So people are also going to leave the seat in that light that...
Forget about people, Inamdi. Let's talk about you. So are you saying that the only outcome that will make sense to you is a guilty verdict? If it's not guilty, then something has gone wrong.
To be very honest, I am not saying so. Let me just end it this way. I genuinely hope that maybe even say the transparency in the whole thing should be made clear and bold to everybody. I just wish even the press and a lot of people who follow this to the latter. If it's transparent enough and it's proven beyond reasonable doubt, why should I keep on holding prejudice against him?
Namdi, good to hear from me.
Thank you, Dario.
You're welcome. Now, Henry, could you please respond to a question I read via Facebook earlier on? Here's the question again from Okowa Charles. Can the CCB investigate an individual who is out of office since its main duty is to checkmate serving public office holders?
Yes, the CCB can investigate. At the extent, it's in the provisions. Even when the public officer has retired, there are provisions in the code of conduct that relate to his activities post-retirement. And even when he's retired, there is no restriction or limitation to the activities he carried out while in public office. And again, for that person that asked the question, the punishments are such that there are those that will still have effect even when the public officer has retired. Take, for instance, if he has left office, then paragraph A or paragraph 18.2 may not be effective because there will be no office for him to vacate and there will be no seat for him to vacate. Yes. But what about disqualification from holding or being appointed into public office? Maybe the gentleman just retired just about some months ago, like Fubara, for instance, I think he retired perhaps maybe late last year or early this year for the purpose of the elections. So if it's bad and disqualified from holding public office for a period of 8, 9, 10 years, he still has an effect. He maybe has left office. Then again, the forfeiture and seizure of properties that were acquired by illicit acquisition of public funds, for instance, can also be effective even if the public officer has left office. So you need to understand this too. If this property has been asked to bring food, is unable to prove them, and then perhaps another infraction, maybe against paragraph 11, where he's required to make declarations in full disclosure, and then faithfully too. And then sub-paragraph 2 there, if he makes any false declaration, and then it's found that some of this property or asset or company are in contravention of the provisions, even if he has retired, they will still be effective because those property and funds or whatever will be forfeited to state. And what about the provision of not opening a public, a public office or having an account abroad? Even when you are retired and it is found out while in public office you had accounts opened abroad in circumstances that violate the provisions of the Code of Conduct, those funds in that account can be forfeited to state.
Well, so I think
with this, even the person who asked the question will see that retiring from public office does not preclude the Code of Conduct to investigate into the activities while in office. And that's a very
important question. Well, Godwin from Womokoro joins. Hello, Godwin, you're welcome. Go ahead.
Hello? Yeah, Dayo.
Go ahead, Godwin.
Hello?
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, there's something I want to ask. Eh? You asked the lawyer the brilliant question. Okay, supposing Sim Tumura perpetually refused to honor the invitation, what would be the penalty?
All right, Godwin. And interestingly, several other persons have sent a similar question as well. Let me read. I'll read a few of those. Andy Amagborujigos, the CCB should do a thorough job, no secret accounts. But good news, Amagborujigos. What if the suspect, like in Sim Fubara's case, refuses to honor the invitation by the CCB? What happens? So, Henry, could you respond to that, please? Okay, another comment here. What if Fubara refuses to honor the invitation? What could be the action of the tribunal? That's from William. So, what happens if he doesn't honor the invitation of the CCB?
Yes, interesting. Our laws are clear, and even pronouncements, of course. If you have an allegation against you, and then you refuse to come and defend yourself, and you are given the opportunity, so you will not even raise the excuse of denial of fair hearing, then of course you are admitting those allegations and those facts. I've told people, even when clients come, that a defendant or a respondent refusing to appear in court or to even file a defense at all will not stop the right of the claimant to proceed. So if in this regard, Fubara decides this is not like the EFCC case, it's distinguishable, and he refuses to come to answer to the allegations, it does not stop the CCB to carry out this investigation. The facts are already presented before them. And then they can also compel him to appear. They can compel him by some warrants. If he refuses, the CCB is like the police. If you make a complaint against the suspect to the police, and the person can just say, I'm not come. If the police probably have
to but didn't it happen with the EFCC and the same individual?
Exactly. I was just going to go there, but it's because our discussion here is focused on the CCB, but I made reference to it that it is not like the EFCC case, right? But even the EFCC, I have maintained my position and I've done some statements in that regard. But as far as I'm concerned, the EFCC can still proceed against the Milaye or whatever the name is. It is not above our laws. If you have permitted me to say what I've been saying, the EFCC, I don't understand why and for whatever reason they are abdicating from that. There is no judgment that Sim Fubara is in court and obtained an order restraining the EFCC to prosecute him or even to investigate him. I have taken time to distinguish this whole issue of Sim Fubara from unrelated preemptive action. I had explained that what it was in the end of the list case, the EFCC was up against the River State House of Assembly and not even the governor of River State. And then the man being worried, he was just preemptive that if he left office, the EFCC may proceed against him and he went to court. Whatever that judgment was, it is not the focus for this discussion. But Sim Fubara, there is nothing stopping EFCC from investigating him. I have also talked about our laws in respect to immunity. The immunity that the governor and the deputy governor, president and vice president enjoy also does not stop investigation. Any investigative agency can investigate the president of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, can investigate the governor of the state, can investigate the vice president and the deputy governor, the deputy governor of the state. The only thing immunity covers them is prosecution while in office. So you investigate them and keep the file. Immediately he steps out of office on 29th of May of any year, get him arrested. For Sim Fubara, he does not even have any immunity. And that's why he's gone in hiding. This is our state. I didn't want to speak in this direction because we are focused on the CCB. You cannot come to say you want to run and manage the fund that belongs to me and my children's future, and then you're having these kind of issues we're discussing every day. It is only in a state where the people have given up and would want to take anything from anybody. No matter the threat and the fear that everybody in Zimbabwe is afraid, how many can they kill? How many persons can they torture? How many persons can they... It's annoying. My children are going to school today and are paying fees because these people are mismanaging my funds. And then now we have an opportunity to decide. The person has not even gone there yet and we are hearing these kind of things. And somebody will say, yes, he's innocent. And that is why we are not vilifying him. Face your innocence. Go and show yourself up. Why can't Tim say, yes, it's a come and investigate me?
Henry,
why can't TSA now say, TCB, who is that petitioner? I want to confront him. I declared my assets appropriately. I do not have any foreign accounts. I did not launder any money because money laundering is part of what they're asking him to come show himself. If I were a candidate of any political party and these allegations are against me, I will come and show myself. And if I can't, it's too much you not vote me. Why are we quiet to these politicians and afraid of them?
And we hold us up, please. We've got Isaac on the line from Bugema. Isaac, you're welcome. Go ahead.
Thank you, Dayo. Dayo, please, with the statement of Parazaheri Ekine, is he saying or is he telling us, is he telling Rivers people now that same Foba did not go for the CCD invitation for today, or is he still into hiding up till now? And we expect for the presence of BBA and governor in Rivers State in 2023.
Okay, Isaac, I'm sure that my guest Henry did not say.
Do I need to respond to that? And that's why I said the one that is so public notice is the EICC invitation and then all the issues surrounding is avoiding, and even his people, we're not just avoiding, we saw all the incidents at the airport when people, reverse people, will be applauding and blocking someone from the investigative authorities to exercise the investigative rights and statutory power they have. But for the CCB, the invitation, I think I understand, is for today. So as we speak at the moment, I don't work with Steve Fumala, I don't work with River State government, so and I'm not privy to the information whether he has gone. The question for me is, I think he should go. If I have a way of advising him and he will listen to me, if he even wants to consult me, I say, let's go together as your lawyer. Come and go answer to these questions. Go and read the petition of the petitioner and see the allegations there. If you have any reason to deny them, you simply deny them and leave the CCB to carry out their investigation. I have had calls to train people on how to write statements, especially as a suspect. You simply give a small piece, maybe two paragraphs. I know nothing about this allegation. So you put the burden on the investigative authorities to go do their work. So why should we at this time, are you afraid? Don't you have answers to those allegations? I'm not speaking in particular to Sim Kumara, to any person who is accused of any offense. If you elect me now, you know, oh, you slap someone, and I'm discussing a similar situation with a client, I mean, a colleague in the office now. But these are things Nigerians need to understand, and especially those who are supporting these individuals. You need to understand this truth, because if you don't understand this truth, then I wonder from what part of your head that you're thinking, even when you want to give support to someone. It's not every time that someone has to be habitual without questioning. Sometimes you're able to question your boss.
Now, Henry, what happens in the event that he doesn't present himself before the CCB? What happens? Now, we don't know that he did not, by the way, and not trying to preempt the situation.
That question has been asked and I answered. I said, the CCB has the power to compel attendance of the person. That's one. Then two, even if they don't want to bother themselves to chase around in Simfumara like the ESCC, I have said the implication in law is that you are admitting all the allegations that are there. The CCB can, by themselves, carry out further investigation to probably get some evidence. And like I said, they prosecute you at the Court of Conduct Tribunal. Would you all say you're not going to go there to file your defenses? So if he doesn't engage his team of lawyers, and of course we know maybe a number of senior advocates of Nigeria to go defend you, then the law is that it's not going to be different because it is Simfumara or it is Henry Ekine or it is Dayo the law stands as it is. If we are a democratic society, that the supremacy and the predominance of the law as distinguished from arbitrariness and other alternatives, if the law should stand supreme, then it means that if a defendant fails to put up defense against any allegation before the court and refuses to come to answer to it, the presumption is that all those allegations are true. And it means simply that the verdict will be entered by the Code of Conduct Tribunal eventually. And then, like I said, the punishments will be read out. There is nobody in this country that is a god.
All right, I've got a few comments via Facebook. Let's see. Jesse Bliscoe is running away from the EFCC just to answer a few questions. Now you come with Conduct Bureau. He will just fly away and disappear. Bright Chinda goes, anyone coming to equity must come with clean hands if he's sincerely intending to serve River State. If not on a loot spray intention, let him offer himself for clarifications. Otherwise, he should not be taken serious as a candidate that will be prudent with our collective resources. Unfortunately, he will not go, yet the few gullibles will be singing praises in defense because of the incumbent governor that wants to use him. God forbid. Well, Larry, we have to wrap up the conversation on that note. Many thanks for joining. And thanks for listening, by the way. My guest, Eric Kinney, is the National Legal Advisor with the Committee for the Defense of Human Rights. Henry, many thanks for your time.
Thank you very much, Dayo. Permit me to just put 1 minute to say, at the moment, I agree that he's presumed innocent. Before anybody misinterprets that I'm saying, he has been established as being culpable of this. That's why he has the right and the opportunity to fair hearing. He should go prove himself. Thank you.
Thank you for your time, Henry.